the difference between what's going on now and what is always going on at different points in time is that we as a people are now awake and paying attention because we don't have a choice to. We can't go anywhere. So we have to watch what is happening in front of us. You have a choice. You can decide that it's an issue that doesn't concern you, or you can say, this does impact me because I have friends in this community. I have friends that are impacted by this, and what am I going to do to support them? The biggest change that we're seeing is that it's a human issue and not the issue of one community. So if I'm in the community and I'm saying the biggest difference is your input, your values being added to the equation, the question is, what discussions can you have within your specific community? What changes need to be made? What have you turned a blind eye to? And through that dialogue and asking questions and challenging people to be accountable, what we'll see is a playing field that will allow all stories to be told and value to be delivered in a way that has never been expressed at any other point in history.
Welcome to the Three Steps to Thrive podcast, where each show will show you three simple, practical, and actionable steps to improve your life or your business. Now, here's your host, James Lamb. And guess what? That's me.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are. My name is James from Three Steps to Thrive podcast. I have a very special guest here today. His name is Shadeed Laser. Shadeed, say hello.
Hello, it's a privilege to be here.
Oh, it's a privilege for us to have you, Shadeed. Now, normally what we do is we bring on entrepreneurs and experts in their field to talk about what they've done and talk about three steps to improve the business or improve yourself, the business owner. Now, we have a very special case. Now, we had a lot of traction from Dr. Manisha White a couple weeks ago talking about the Black Lives Matter movement, and Shadeed is here to share many of his experiences as well. So let me tell you a little bit more about Shadeed, because I think you're going to get more of an appreciation. And don't forget, team, just like anything else, we have such good context from Dr. Manisha White. At the same time, she's one person with her opinion, right? And so the more perspectives that we bring in, the more we're able to understand a situation. And I know a lot of you are really concerned, but a lot of us, myself included, and I'm the first person to admit this, I don't have the context to be able to understand what is happening. So this is adding some information. Information is always a good thing. Understanding is always a good thing. So let me tell you a little bit more about Shadeed. Shadeed is Baltimore's number one leading small business advisor, and he's also a U.S. Navy veteran as well. Shadeed is the leader of the most prominent Black business partnership network of the East Coast of the United States. And he's also a philanthropist. He has organized community redevelopment campaigns. He's raised millions of dollars to empower lower income communities. And he's also a venture capitalist. And I know those are really, really key to a lot of your small businesses as well. So he's invested in the growth of more than 200 startup business communities through a community fund, which is amazing. So welcome to the show, Shadeed. You're kind of a big deal all the way over there on the East Coast. Why do you tell us a little bit more? Could you really have your finger on the pulse on the Black Business Partnership Network in the East, on the East Coast? Tell us, are people optimistic? How are they feeling at the moment? Just give us kind of the 50,000 foot view.
Well, I have a unique bird's eye view in that as president of SCORE, which is the nation's largest network of business advisors, powered by the Small Business Administration, which is the governing body of small business in America, based in the fourth largest African-American population in the United States, I get to see small business from a unique vantage point in that we help to guide innovation for Black businesses. And what we're seeing is a few facets here that are a bit multicultural as it relates to the chief issue. Number one is we have a call to action for many people across the rainbow, in that with the unique set of circumstances that are going on with everyone being at home and stay at home, we're seeing things from a different lens, in that you cannot turn away from what has happened to, let's say, George Floyd in this case. And so the big difference is that it's not a something that, well, this person may have had a criminal record or may have had issues in their past, and this is why it's happened. Mm-hmm. This is the first time in recent memory that, oh my goodness, a human being is being murdered in front of my eyes. And so it became a human issue. And that's where the excitement, or let's say the call to action, mm-hmm. is coming from. So it's multifaceted, and we'll go into that.
What do you think is the difference between this one and all the previous stuff that's happened before? You know, there's a number of publications like the New York Times or Times Magazine, right? Or CNN, and they kind of, you know, now that, you know, and let's be honest, every, you know, human life is valuable, and it's a tragedy that George Floyd had to pass away, right? Had to get murdered in front of everybody. But all of a sudden, all these publications are bringing back other African-American lives that were questionably killed by the police. Why now? Why is this one really the catalyst for a lot of people to look at things differently, do you think?
The big difference is that George Floyd is seen as a human. And so this particular tragedy has been humanized. And the reason it's been humanized is because we as a society are going through a pandemic, where in South Africa, they're wearing masks. In Australia, they're wearing masks. In Calgary, they're wearing masks. So we all have this common denominator in race or culture and economics. Everyone's at a equal playing field, where you may lose your job, you may be without. So everyone, it has a higher sense of empathy at this time. And so when something of, let's say, impacts to this level where everyone has to see it, it became a human rights issue versus a Black community issue or a systemic issue that people can't connect to, that are outside of that culture, so they don't necessarily want to get involved with it because they don't want to take the right steps. Many people have the right intent, but in this case, since it's a human issue, now from a multicultural standpoint, people are jumping in and saying, this is not right from a human standpoint. And that's the chief difference between every other incident that has happened from the 40s, 50s, 60s, on up to the LA riots, and as history has told the story, but this, in this case, we are all suffering at this time, so we all are looking for the solution.
Yeah, no, it's a really good point that you make. Is this, you know, Dr. Mynisha White said this has been a long time coming, and I'm probably sure would you agree with that statement?
Well, I approach it from a different standpoint. I agree, but I approach it from the standpoint of how we got to this point, which is our laws needing to be revamped, our system overall needing to be revamped. And if you look at the history, especially in the United States, with our monuments to the state of Rhode Island, for example, being let's say named after a plantation, in states or commonwealths such as Virginia having over 100 laws still on the books that were written during a time where Virginia was considered the capital of the Confederacy. when the laws and how we got to this point have not been addressed, these situations leave loopholes for scenarios like this to happen. So yes, I do agree.
Yeah, it's really interesting, isn't it? And now all of these things are coming down, but it seems like it's almost like a volcano where it builds up the pressure and builds up the pressure, and now it's coming out. So you see a number of changes happening, right? You see legislation, even in NASCAR, taking away the Confederate flag is no longer allowed. You see a lot of these statues coming down, and people are seemingly agreeing with it. And now, and I have to admit ignorance in this area, Shadid, now you're seeing all the tragedies of what has happened. You know, they talk about the black business owners who were really thriving back in like the 40s and 50s, and then they got plowed under because they created Central Park, and all these things that, you know, now we're horrified on. But sadly enough, you know, well, maybe it's because I'm Canadian, I don't think that's the reason why. I don't think a lot of Americans knew what had happened, right? Which is the case. Is this something you're optimistic about? What are your thoughts here? Are people, you know, tell us, let me put it this way, tell us your thoughts. Is this a time to be optimistic? And then tell us what you're hearing among the African-American community, both business owners and regular people.
Well, my thoughts, what makes me optimistic is that for the first time, people are holding corporations accountable, and people who are outside of the African American community are more or less going through a spring cleaning or analysis of what is my relationship with my African American friends, coworkers, business partners, clients. In that, I see what's going on, but do I really connect with, and how do I relate to that? And now those tough and uncomfortable questions are starting to be asked. And with that energy, that's where the changes are happening. African Americans have been going through many inequalities and brutality, so on and so forth, at different levels since, you know, the beginning of the history of the United States. So, and black and brown communities around the world have some form of suffering that goes on in their respective nations. But on a global stage, what we're seeing and what makes me optimistic is that we, meaning not just African Americans in their community, but the entire rainbow of cultures, are saying we need to fix this. And it's cascading down into corporations, into businesses, where I had a conversation this week with a company that focuses on diversity, but their board is all white. And so they have said, well, we internally need to make those changes. But in dealing with companies, when I have my clients, my partners, my joint venture partners, I need to know where they stand from a value standpoint, from a cultural standpoint. And what the beauty of it is this has become a talking point for all issues. So if, let's say, a woman, for example, has an endorser deal or influencer deal with a Fortune 500 company, she's now asking the question, how do you align with my values as a company? And how it impacts the African-American community is that at the upper echelon of, let's say, black excellence, the influencers, the leaders, the thinkers are now demanding accountability from companies. So there's literally, in many of the top African-American masterminds, there's a group discussion of, well, what companies are we aligning ourselves with? Because for the first time, the power of the message, the power of the endorsement, the power of the platform is now being considered. And if I'm endorsing a company that is silent when my culture is going through a huge uprising and many people are questioning, then what is the value of that relationship? And so those aspects make me feel more empowered and more optimistic in a time of uncertainty than I expected going into it.
Yeah. No, that's I'm gonna cautiously say that's good news, but you're right. You never know, right? And this is one of the challenges with this movement is it needs longevity, right? For real change to happen, it needs longevity. It cannot just be a flash in the pan, so to speak. You know, it's interesting because you bring up a lot of really good points there. What you said had a lot of good context. There's a lot of Fortune 500 companies out there, and they have all white people on the board. Or some of them are really old school. They have all white men on the board, right? And women's rights kind of, it really sort of, what I think it's within the same decade, if I'm not mistaken, in America, that sort of legislature finally recognized that all humans were the same, right? But it's, you know, how, I guess, where does that start, Shadeed? So let's assume we're on the board of a really old school investment firm, all white men on the board. Is it, my question to you, is it about bringing someone of color on the board, or is it about them looking themselves in the mirror and trying to figure out why they're in the spot in the first place?
Excellent question. Excellent question. What one of the three major areas of change that this scenario has been a catalyst for is company owners, board of directors, executives who have the right intent but lack the cultural awarenesses and nuances in order to make systemic change are bringing themselves to task in terms of where do we stand on this issue. Where they tend to fall short is when the diversity is not there and they just put out a statement that maybe in some cases they copied and pasted on from online, or they, let's say, produced a statement based on how they felt but not accounting for the cultural ins and outs that would make the statement that they released more genuine. And so what that leads to, especially with our consumers and influencers who are more educated and informed than ever, it makes it feel performative, it makes it feel disingenuous. So, and it leads to a negative PR backlash. Here in Maryland, where I'm based, there's a very popular company who I absolutely love. It's a family business. I am a client of the business. However, and I've seen them grow since the beginning in 2011. Absolutely love them. However, they took some time to release a statement, and the statement missed the mark. And the influencers who also use that software held them accountable.
Tell us why did it miss the mark?
Well, it missed the mark because in many cases, especially in this case, where Black Lives Matter versus All Lives Matter, if this particular scenario calls for a direct statement of solidarity for Black and brown people in this case. And in many cases, from a cultural standpoint, when you say all lives matter or we stand for diversity in all cases, it feels like it's a slight because this is specifically a Black issue that impacts the Black community. And so when Black collective sees that, it feels like it's washing over the issue or glossing over the issue instead of saying, I stand in solidarity for. In many cases, this has happened in the past. And in this particular case, because the magnifying glass is on this issue, it shows where a company stands instead of saying, okay, my employees are coming into the office or working remote and they feel uncomfortable, they're stressed, they see a member of their culture being essentially executed over and over and over. So coworkers may ask about it, peers may ask about it, and it almost feels like you're an ambassador at a press release for this issue that may not impact you. You may live in another city, another town, but due to the power of the internet and due to the power of everyone being more connected, because twice as many people are online during the pandemic, you feel more connected, you feel the impact, and it's visceral. So companies need to be more aware of that.
Is that because they need to almost be a little bit contentious when they do this? Like, it's, you know, if you can totally have a kind of a statement that doesn't mean anything put out there, right? You can say, you know, so-and-so corporation believes that, and they probably won't use the term all lives matter, but we believe in diversity and strength, but they won't say actually Black Lives Matter, right? They won't actually put specifically that. And that is a really wishy-washy statement, isn't it?
Absolutely. I'll give you an example. And for my organization, diversity is important. In terms of our mentors, the amount of women mentors that we have, it needs to be better. So there was a grant that I wrote and was awarded for my organization. And so it was to put on a women's conference with the idea of attracting women business mentors. That is what the grant was for. I'm a man. I know that I can get the message up to a certain point, but in order for the message to be more effective and to connect with the demographic that I'm looking to reach, which are talented business women, I cannot be the person who's leading that message. I can stand in support, I can stand beside, I can echo the sentiments, but my message needs to be led by talented women. So in this particular case, it is more or less the same thing, where to your example of the all-white board and, let's say, financial services, representation is very important. So I would not make a statement in support of a community without the input of that community itself, a trusted member, a trusted advisor, maybe, let's say, putting together a focus group to gain all perspectives. It is the, in having the right intent, it can also signal a form of arrogance to say, I know what that culture is feeling. And that's what companies are, let's say, doing to miss the boat when it comes to wanting to be inclusive, but not including the people that are offended in this case.
Yeah, no, it's almost like you're being too, you know, it's almost like the companies are being too careful. This is not the time to be careful, right? This is almost the time to be a little bit bold. Why, and I'm going to ask you a challenging question here, Shadeed. Why does diversity matter? Why does it matter to have perspective from different people? Is that because you think better decisions come out of it? Is that because we need to look at everybody the same, and so we need to include diverse members so you don't end up culturally pigeonholing a group of people? Why does diversity matter?
It starts in childhood, James. There's a famous study called the Dahl test, where, and we'll use, let's say, race and culture to illustrate this example, where a group of Black children were given white and Black dolls and were asked the questions, what do you find beautiful? What do you find attractive? What do you want to be like, essentially? And in many cases, the Black children chose a doll that was not of themselves, and that can signal a number of things. When your image is not represented, let's say, in what you study and what you believe and your identity, it causes a disconnect. And when you are raised to believe that you're not, let's say, enough or you're not represented, it makes you go beyond yourself or go beyond your values in order to fit in. When you have inclusion and you have diversity, you see yourself in what you're contributing to. So when you see yourself, that's a form of affirmation. When you see yourself being affirmed, it allows you to mirror that energy and essentially have a greater contribution. If I was to, let's say, participate in making a recipe, but I'm not asked to contribute, let's say, my cultural spices or what I find to be tasty, I would not enjoy that finished product. I would not, let's say, feel, let's say, bound to the overall result. So when we talk about diversity, decisions are made in a business or in an organization. And if you're going to make decisions, you want to have a full scope of ideas, experiences, and background. And it's not just so for, let's say, Black Americans. It goes across the rainbow, cultural rainbow, in that if you have, let's say, a calendar of events and you only have certain cultures which are being celebrated, there are stories that are not being told. And when those stories are included, it adds to the richness of that particular company. It allows you to celebrate all that are included with either that company, that group, that organization, that community.
Yep. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. You mentioned a study at the very beginning. What year was that? Do you know approximately?
I want to say it was the 60s. Maybe in the show notes we can get some definitive numbers on that. There was numerous dial tests that were done throughout the years, but as early as the 60s, that particular test was created.
Do you think that would change today if you did that test?
I think it would. In many cases, it would. And I'll give a few reasons. Number one, with pop culture, in that I often say that hip hop music has done more good for the world than even the civil rights music movement. In that, and some may, I can see my mom now listening to this saying, "What are you saying, Shadi?" But mom, I'll explain. So what I mean by this is when it comes to, let's say, the institution of racism, which is taught, it's behavior that is inherited from beliefs passed down from grandma, grandpa, on down the line. Children do not inherently have this feeling. It's pretty hard for the institution of racism of any color. If your child is listening to Snoop Dogg, for example, if you see, let's say, someone from a different culture who you idolize or revere in some way, it makes you learn more about that person. And since we live in an information era, it's easier to find. Whereas during times in the past, propaganda, stereotypes were easier to promote because there were less mediums to consume information. So with, let's say, hip hop music being one of the most dominant forms of entertainment that filters into reality television, cable television, music, sports, so on and so forth, it creates the framework where you can say, well, if my dad says that this group of people are not okay, but I really love their music and my friends are cool too because I have a personal relationship with them, maybe what dad is saying is not a reflection of the real world.
No, it's a really interesting statement that you make. So your mother, where did she grow up?
Oh, my mother is originally from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
What does she think of this?
Oh, my mother. Well, my mother is, that's an excellent question. That's an excellent question. Well, my mother believes that police brutality is wrong. She is tired of seeing the continuous replaying of the execution of George Floyd. But at the same time, here's another detail, is that in traveling to and from work, she's in the middle of protests in Washington, D.C. So There's the health issue of COVID-19, where she is within the target range of, let's say, peak ability to catch COVID-19, mm-hmm. and having to weave in and out of very uncertain times, it made for stress throughout the family because, hey, I'm a martial artist. I'm pretty, let's say, formidable. I can handle myself and defend myself. But when you are worried about your mom or you're worried about what someone may do or may react, it creates uncertainty in the air. And as far as, let's say, some of the differences from her being old enough to remember some of the, well, many of the civil rights marches of, let's say, the 60s, as well as the 70s as well, LA riots, so on and so forth, I would say that the multiculturalism, the unified approach of these protests has been a surprise for her. Mm. And because that hasn't been, let's say, in the 60s, it was a bit multicultural. In this case, the numbers are much greater, and public outcry for justice, as well as specifically the burning of the police department, those typically, that does not happen. And the call for police reform and defunding the police in Minneapolis, and also with the call to action to dismantle the police altogether. And finally, the reaction of President Trump in terms of her belief of not stepping forward to, let's say, soothe the flames of tension in the country. Lots of great discussions around this recently. Mm.
It's interesting, right? Because you, and I said this in the beginning, but you're a U.S. Navy veteran. You've served, which is kind of the ultimate representation that you love your country. And I think you do. And for those listeners, you can't see, but Shadid is nodding and agreeing with me. So you love this country. You've served. Does the politics frustrate you?
Do the politics frustrate me? Well, I would say for many Black Americans specifically, historically, there's always been the ongoing debate of, well, how can you serve a country that historically has not been a fair playing ground for all? And so that discussion is alive and well within our community. But the politics, I view politics as an individual decision and opportunity to change at your level. So at the national level, presidential level, that's a story that plays out on television. At the local level, I have the full power to impact and communicate with those who make policy. So let's say when we look at the various systems that could lead to this challenge, the unique aspect about Baltimore, Maryland is we've already been through the Freddie Gray trial, which was the precursor to George Floyd. And so in that case, we already have a case study of what can go wrong. And so after the Freddie Gray trial, what many people don't know nationally is that many of either the community leaders or entrepreneurs began to form relationships with government officials, specifically the police department. And so one of the outcomes from, let's say, that trial was when George Floyd happened, there was a phone call that was made. There was a few Zoom calls that said, well, we need to have dialogue. You need to make a statement, or you need to meet with youth group A, B, C, D, so that our kids understand that you are doing everything possible in order to avoid the situation in Minneapolis happening here in Baltimore. Going up to, let's say, local, whether it's the alderman level, local elected officials, giving local elected officials the platform to discuss, let's say, police reform and or policies that related to the scenario was another area where we were able to educate our community. And finally, with direct contact with the mayor has been, has attended, or mayor or representative, has attended at least seven of my partner and I's events pre-COVID-19. So when it comes to politics, which I consider to be an individual decision that I have impact to change and influence on a local level, I feel that any frustration that I have, I also have the power to influence and change.
The mayor of Baltimore, are they white?
No. Jack Young is African-American.
Yes. Do you think it should matter or shouldn't matter?
Representation does matter. When Barack Obama was elected, many people cried. Why did they cry? Because for the first time, and especially grandpa, grandma, for the first time in their life, they were able to see the, let's say, the hopes and wildest dreams of their ancestors come to play. Many, many, many African-Americans, maybe up until 2004, where have felt, in many cases, a disconnect with, let's say, politics, let's say, government as a whole, because they felt that it was not for them. And historically, especially from a systemic standpoint, many of the laws were not written for Black Americans. If you go back, you can, the three-fifths of a human being, you can look into Bill of Rights, you, you can look at the 13th Amendment, 14th Amendment, and also when you look at, let's say, redlining, which is segregating specific communities based on race, and this has happened up until the 1990s. So when you look at everything from, why is this neighborhood all white, or why is this neighborhood all Black, or why is the school district underfunded if it's in this neighborhood? Is it based on zip code, or is it based on race? And the written laws that support that, it would easily let you know why those things matter. So representation is a major factor in, to your earlier question about inclusion. And when you see yourself in certain positions, it allows you to give yourself permission that is possible. And it allows you to, it changes the conversation that you have with your children or with, you know, your community, that you can aspire to be this too.
Right. Shadi, do you have children?
Not yet. I am the world's greatest uncle.
Well, let's talk about, because you will probably have kids one day, or you have at least have, like you said, your niece or your nephews. Tell me, what is, if this movement continues, what is your greatest hope? When they get to your age, what do you hope that they will feel or they will see?
That is a great question. Great question. So the greatest hope is the American dream being attainable for all. Meaning, when my children have a goal, they think about what they are possible, what is possible to achieve it, instead of what barriers exist to stop them. I would do everything in my power to make that a reality, but when they leave my circle of influence, when they leave the home, when they go out into the world, the systems, the laws, the politics all support that which is within the home, which is, despite my best intentions, there is a world that exists and has existed that has made that difficult, not impossible. And the wildest dream and greatest hope is that when my children and their friends and their community sets forth to make systemic change, to be the next leaders, that they have all the support of community, of the systems, and the politics to back them.
So it's true equality.
Isn't that an awesome idea?
That is an awesome idea. And it's a, I don't know if it's a pipe dream, Shadid, but I hope we get there, right? And I really hope we get there. Look, I'm going to ask you your three steps to how to support or how to improve. Team, every week we normally bring on entrepreneurs and business owners like Shadid. But in this case, we're having a special session, and you know that because you're listening thus far. So Shadid, what would you say to somebody who supports the movement but is not sure how, or how would they improve themselves?
The three P's. So you want to improve yourself. You want to connect. Your heart tells you that there's more that you can do, but you don't exactly know how. Here's the three-step process. I'll make this very simple. Number one is people. You have people in your life, your coworkers, your friends, your clients, people you see at the gym. And now is the time to turn up the humanity in your conversations. So if you notice that there's something going on in the world, what I would task you to do is to use your ears and employ active listening. Meaning, when you see something going on, ask your friends, how are they doing? Ask your friends, say, hey, I don't understand what is going on, but I love you. I admire you. I value your contribution to my life. Let's talk about it. Mm-hmm. And the conversation, it may not be as comfortable as you want it to be or that your intent may be, but it goes a long way to someone who may need that release through that conversation. So next is process, the process. So as citizens, you have to be involved. You have to be connected. And it starts with understanding your local processes. That means voting. That means taxes. That means overall community engagement and empowerment. Within our community, marching is one phase of what is considered the holistic plan. And changing the laws through voting is another. Through policies that have existed is another. In some cases, removing, let's say, historic symbols of racism and oppression is another. So what you can do in your particular area, that can be signing a petition, that could be sharing information, that could be purchasing a book for your friends who have the impact, let's say, culturally to make a change so that they have a greater understanding. It could be, hey, I found this article on the process and I thought it was informative. Let me share it with you. Let me know your thoughts. Let's talk about it. Next, platform. So people, process, and platform. If you are listening to this broadcast, you have access to a platform. You are viewing this or listening to this from some form of device, some sort form of social media channel. The question I have for you is, how are you using that channel to amplify the voices that you support? You have the ability to showcase the people, the information, the causes that are valuable to you. So if you have a story that you want to be told, use your platform, exercise your platform to share those stories. If there is an injustice that you notice, exercise your ability to speak your voice through that platform. You can always do, let's say, a rising star. This individual is doing great work in the community. I just want you to know more about it. If you buy from this platform, I'll also give you 20 minutes of my particular gift or talent. So when you exercise the three P's of people, amplifying the humanity, process, and understanding the underlying conditions and being knowledgeable in those, and platform where you understand that you have a voice, then you can simply exercise those each day and make an impact.
Yeah. I love that, Shadid. I don't know if you just came up with that on the spot. I only told Shadid about the three steps beforehand, but those are amazing, well thought out, and the three P's, they actually work. So good on you. Before we wrap up, Shadid, final thoughts.
The difference between what's going on now and what is always going on, at different points in time, is that we as a people are now awake and paying attention because we don't have a choice to. We can't go anywhere. So we have to watch what is happening in front of us. You have a choice. You can decide that it's an issue that doesn't concern you, or you can say, this does impact me because I have friends in this community. I have friends that are impacted by this, and what am I going to do to support them? The biggest change that we're seeing is that it's a human issue and not the issue of one community. So if I'm in the community and I'm saying the biggest difference is your input, your values being added to the equation, the question is, what discussions can you have within your specific community? What changes need to be made? What have you turned a blind eye to? And through that dialogue and asking questions and challenging people to be accountable, what we'll see is a playing field that will allow all stories to be told and value to be delivered in a way that has never been expressed at any other point in history. I'm excited for what will come next.
Good to hear, my friend. And I hope your excitement is warranted. I think most of us do, right? So we're all with you, my friend. All right, team, we're going to wrap it up there. Shadid, you're an amazing character, and I appreciate everything about you. I just love how thoughtful your answers were today, and I appreciate your input. So thank you for joining us today.
Oh, it was my pleasure.
All right, team, we're going to wrap it up there. You know, normally I ask you to rate and review the show. In this case, though, I think the important thing is to share it. So if you got something out of this and you learned it, you learned something, share it, because we can create that ripple effect. You share it on your social media, you share it on email, you talk to people. And if you can just change one, it's not about change, it's about, it is about change, but it's about change through looking at your oneself first. And I think if you create that change in one person, that makes a difference. You create change in five, you start a movement, right? So Shadid, again, amazing having you on the show. Team, we're going to wrap it up here. And team, take care out there. James Lamb with Three Steps to Thrive. Appreciate each and every one of you. Thank you.
Don't forget, if you love this podcast, please leave a review. One of my goals is to support as many entrepreneurs and small business owners as possible with these simple, actionable, and practical tips. My team and I spend countless hours finding great guests who are experts in their field, and these people 100% volunteer to be on this show. And one of the best ways to help other people find this podcast is with your review. So if you would be so kind and subscribe and leave a review, this show can get out to more people, and I would be forever grateful. So thank you in advance. Okay, guys, thanks so much once more for tuning in. See you next week and have a great few days.